Mr. Hicks, reel 3.
It suddenly gelled for me with the works of an artist whom I admire very much. You don't see him in this country much now, but an artist called De Soto.
Oh, yes.
Kinetic artist.
Yes.
And I was interested to see in the idea he creates these objects where space is made extremely mysterious physically. You don't quite know where you are in those objects by very simple means. Vertical lines painted on a board, and then perhaps a wire or string stretched vertically in front of the board at a particular interval, a particular space, and this set that up. And the thought of those bars, I suddenly thought that this was something that had happened elsewhere in modern art that I could use to a different end.
Yes.
Because I felt that if I could trap a human image in the yes. middle of all this, something would begin to happen. Do you see what I mean?
Yes, quite.
Which was
yes.
consistent with my aims in the Requiem. That's how that. Yes. How that piece sort of began to evolve.
That's fascinating. And then the upright piece on tape tracks, that
yeah.
has got something of the Soto as an inspiration.
Yes,
it was certainly a mysterious.
Yes, that's right. Yes, that absolutely.
Atmosphere
yes,
in that
yeah,
piece as
yeah.
well.
I find in all my... I'm getting a little bit better at this now, but so often in my work, and it's not a. I don't think it's a bad thing. I see it in students. You know, I never think it's a bad thing. You try and pack 3 or 4 works into one, you get too much in. You know, you've got too many ideas, and it's always a mere question of subtracting at some stage and simplifying down. And with that one, the upright. I can't remember what I call that. Posthumous 4, I think that piece. You know, it was a question of. I realised, in fact, I had. The idea was a very simple idea, and I was overcomplicating it, I was packing that thing full of all sorts of illusions and images, and eventually I simplified it right down, and the medal just became the medal and the tracks and the mysterious thing.
Yes.
Those ropes and things in front. That piece for me, and Posthumous 3, which is the one where there's just one tiny little image of a soldier in the middle and a big medal. Remember that one?
I do, yes.
Those technically for me were interesting because that was the first time where I'd used spray. And
yes.
I felt a need to get more atmosphere. A lot of the work up to then in the Requiem had been very hard and very tight.
Yes.
And I wanted to make some pieces that where that was relaxed and got more atmospheric feeling space into it. The idea of spray occurred to me, and I used it. And I have, in fact, ever since, with some gaps, been using spray, but those for me were rather seminal pieces in terms of future developments.
Yes, I saw some pictures, I think, which went to a Birmingham show in your studio,
that's right.
Which had been using
spray
as a technique
in
those paintings.
Yeah. I noticed that those two were the ones that artists tended to prefer out of the whole collection. Artists did.
Yes, that's interesting.
That was something.
And these two separate paintings, which aren't part of the series.
Yes, the two small ones.
The two small ones. How did they fit into?
They came in at the same time as I was making the drawings. I felt that I had. You see, it was a long time since I had painted a head, for instance, at all. And I decided that I had to practice, if you like. You know, I had to have a run in to see what happened. So I painted those two small paintings, which also gave me a bit of a feeling into the sort of colour mood that I wanted to set up. You know, which is very rather dark tone, sombre, and so forth. They emerged like that, and I also wanted to see, you know, whether it was going to be possible for me to mix. Abstract figuration and figurative figuration, and all those problems I began to solve in those first two paintings. I quite like those two paintings, you know, I've still got those. I think they've got a feeling to them. And the prints, they came almost at the end of the series, in fact. Yes, it was. I was almost through the series. And I looked at some of the collages that I'd done, and I'd been wanting to make some prints, and I suddenly thought here was a chance that I could use the design, and technically with Photoscreen I could use some of the work that I'd done there, you know, to produce.
Yes.
And I actually I got a very good printer to work with, who initiated me into the mysteries. And he actually did, I cut the screens and so forth and worked on those myself, but he did all the printing. Mm. He printed them for me.
They're very well printed.
Yes, he's a very good printer. Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah.
Excellent.
Yeah.
Prints. And how about Boy and Veteran? Is there any particular interest in the way that
Well, if you like, yes. That one came after I'd completed the Boy at War, which is the one with the row of masks, and then the young boy painted. And the dark piece, which we were talking about, with the bars. And I felt, looking at those two pieces, that I would like to try and combine ideas from both of them, which is what I did in The Boy and Veteran. The original idea for the psychology of the piece was sparked off by the photographic material that I've been looking at. It struck me the difference between the young kids straight out there and the veterans, you know, the difference in the faces and so forth. It was very striking. And sometimes you could see through one, you know, they used to, they print a sequence of shots, say, through an action. I remember one or two. There was one horrifying one where the photographer had taken shots of the boy, of the men, back in camp, you know, relaxing and so on. And then there was a sudden emergency and they all went off in a helicopter. And then they had a terrible time and they came back. And the final shot was of the pilot of the helicopter breaking down. When he was back, he was safe, but you know, a lot of his friends were killed. And it followed it right the way through, and you could see the changes in the faces, you know, as well. And that was a very simple point I wanted to make in that one, which is why I made the sculpture, this pretty tough, you know, veteran.
Yes.
And the boy asleep, young boy asleep on both sides of it. But as well as that, I put the bars in front of the young boy. I wanted him to sleep behind bars. I don't know if you remember that piece, but there are real bars in front, and then there are painted bars.
Yes.
Illusionistic bars, painted, yes, on the same plane as the head is painted, and all this sets up a sort of mysterious,
yes,
thing going on. You know,
yes, I think that's a very fine piece.
Yeah, I think that is, again, one of the best, yes. And then I used the map, I had the idea of the map in that,
yes,
too. Because that, again, was something. Funny enough, I remember that from when I was a child. During the war, because I remember my mother pointing out maps and saying, that's where Daddy is now, you know. And then they were using these great arrows. And again, in Life magazine, you saw these maps with these massive arrows saying 21st Division or something, you know, meaning the movement. And it struck me then, you know, that one was looking at, it's so easy to look at something like that, and you forget that that arrow represents, you know, 10,000 men doing whatever they're doing, you know.
Yes.
It certainly isn't what one is doing sitting at home. And I felt it was just a part of an image that I wanted to get in there somehow, you know, so I used it in that one.
Yes.
And, of course, the arrows also gave me a way of formally uniting that piece. They, if you remember, they curve up like this and they come round into the centre, and they do unite the whole thing. They give that curve on a formal, yes, basis.
Yes.
Well, I'm glad you like that piece. I rather like that piece. And I like the I haven't done very much figurative sculpture. As you know, I have a sculptress wife who does a lot. But I felt in that head that actually I did sort of get a feeling in that head that I quite liked. Just in pure, if you just took that head off the piece and had it as,
yes,
a piece of sculpture.
Yes, I agree.
I haven't done any more since then. Head. But you never know. You were asking me if there's anything else that I would like to talk about. And I think one thing is the whole area of artists who get into the public arena, so to speak. You see, most 20th century art has been private art in the West. And in the East, where it's been public art, the quality of the art, generally speaking, to a Western eye at any rate, has been very low. And you really put yourself out on a big limb, I think, in the West, if you set out to make a public statement about a subject which everybody knows about or thinks they know something about, has feelings about, etc. You know what I mean? I was vaguely aware of this when I started. I think if I had been as aware of it as I got later on, I might have had second thoughts about starting. I don't really mean that. But certainly, once things got to the stage of people having to come and look at it, and the questions of getting it shown, etc., one's life became very anxious, or minded. You know, I find it very difficult to cope with. I cope with it all right. But you immediately, and quite rightly, I mean, you are immediately open to all sorts of questions, what one would regard oneself as misinterpretations, etc., etc. Now, for instance, when it was shown in the North, it was shown in Birmingham, no, Manchester, and it was shown at the University of Durham. And I did two television interviews up there. Now, these were not art interviews. It wasn't Melvin Bragg, you know what I mean? These were very straight news journalist interviews, you know? And they asked some very tough questions, and there you were, on the air. And I began to realise what it must be like for anyone in the public arena who gets up and lays himself on the line in some way. I think myself, it would be a good... I would like to see more artists doing this. I don't say spending their whole lives doing it, because I think as an artist you can't do that, or very few people can do that. John Berger wrote that very interesting book about Picasso, I don't know whether you read it, in which one of his central themes really was that he would be very interested to see what Picasso would have produced if he hadn't retired since Guernica, but every now and then had in fact, say, gone to China, you know, and seen what was going on and whether it might have inspired him and so forth. And he had a valid point, I think. I mean, Picasso was thrashing around for subject matter,
yes.
I felt, quite often, wasn't he?
Quite, right, I mean, yes.
And I think that artists are more concerned in this way in the States than they are in England. There have been some areas, for instance, there was a scheme in Wales, I don't know if you remember it a short time ago, where the Welsh Arts Council commissioned artists to make posters, huge posters, which were put up on normal poster hoardings.
Yes.
Which I think is an interesting idea.
Yes, I like that idea.
Yeah, very good idea. I think most of the posters that were done were... they didn't concern themselves, for instance, with Welsh nationalism, for instance, or anything else in that way. They concerned themselves with art itself as a subject, as far
yes.
as I remember. But I found that an experience, and I'm glad I went through. It was a salutary experience. I think it was a strengthening experience. It actually gave me a lot of confidence, having gone through that, I think, in myself, so to speak, as a person. I felt I'd done something which... I don't know, it just made me feel a bit stronger.
Yes.
Because I think as an artist, very often, one does sometimes have a certain sense of guilt at what one is doing. You know, we do feel somehow that what we are doing is divorced in some way from life. I mean, in one's head one knows it isn't. Because, in fact, even if you're an abstract painter, like I'm painting abstract painting, like one's only got to look at the whole field of design, textile design, product design, one knows that ideas that come primarily from sculptors or fine artists have filtered straight through and have in fact affected the whole world. This is a fact, you can't duck that one. But still, you know, one would quite like to get a more natural response to one's work than one usually does from the world.
Do you think more commissions would be a help to the artists vis-à-vis the community?
Well, yes, I wish I could say that I did. I think that they are, but, you know, you do hear... William Pye is a friend of mine. Now, he's had two sculptures smashed up, one of them twice, I think, which were commissioned and put in public places. I don't know if you know the King's Road Sainsbury's.
Yes, I do.
Well, now, Lord Sainsbury had a... He was instrumental. And they built rather a nice little sort of cloister outside that with some seats where you can... It isn't a cloister, but it's a little open space where you can sit. And people do sit there. And old age pensioners can sit there in the sun and so on. And he had a commission for a piece of sculpture, and an abstract sculptor won it. And I like it. I like the piece, you know. But I heard through the grapevine that Sainsbury said that he was never, ever going to go through that again because he'd been attacked by so many people for putting this monstrosity up. Yes, it's true.
That's really very sad to
hear. It is sad, yes. And there's no doubt about it that there is an immense public resistance to, particularly, I think, to sculpture, as a matter of fact. Not always without some reason, I have to admit. I think there is too much abstract sculpture of rather poor quality about. Interestingly enough, Theo Crosby went to Scandinavia a few years back, and I met him after he came back, and he was saying that he'd been totally converted to figurative sculpture over there because he said that they have the habit over there of putting figurative sculpture on their modern buildings. And he had been a strong abstract man in many ways, but he said no, he'd been converted.
Yes, I think public commissions in Sweden particularly are very successful.
Yes,
often,
right. Yeah.
And more so in many ways than the sort of commissions that are given here.
Yeah, the trouble is I think that we've lost the tradition here, and I don't think that we have many... I don't think we have many sculptors. I can think of very few sculptors whom one would commission to do a figurative piece, you know, on a building now. And I wouldn't count myself one either.
If we wanted a sculpture for the park here, do you think we would find someone to do a commemorative sculpture or something to get into the park or on the theme of conflicts in the 20th century or war and peace or something like that?
Well, I certainly think that if you wanted the best thing you could get, you would want to open your eyes outside England. I don't say you mightn't end up with an English sculpture, but I think you ought to. I think you should look more widely.
Yes,
yeah.
We do give some commissions in a small way, as you know, only to so far Ken Howard and a number of other artists
worked for. These painters are right.
But I suppose the question might arise at some future moment.
Yeah. I mean, there is one, I think, very interesting sculptor working now, figuratively, called John Davis. I don't know whether you've seen his work. He had a show at the Whitechapel about 2 years ago.
No, I
don't know. I'm sure he must have been snapped up by a gallery, and he's probably working away somewhere. The Tate bought a couple straight away. I'm not saying that he would be able to operate along in the field you're thinking of necessarily, but he had a very strong, rather odd feeling about human beings in his work. It was impressive, I thought. To get back to the Requiem, the War Museum, and to my father,
it's in this country.
I know how much it moved my mother, who's still alive, when she came and saw the work here. And I somehow feel, in a way, that it doesn't sound too corny, but the fact that I did that work and now it's ended up here makes a connection which is important to me back between me and my father. To me.